Line four's on the right, babe. Hey, it's been a while.
Not that Mackie's back in town.
Yeah, I'm back.
Out old Mackie is back.
Chris McMichael. Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Fan. WFAN.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How we doing on this Tuesday morning? 2:03, I'm back. I've been back, but I'm back home in the overnights. Let's go. Me and Fleegs rolling with you for 3 hours. 888-808-1019. Hope everybody had a great summer. Had a great August, at least. It's been a while since we've spoken. Everything good? If you listen to me in afternoons last Thursday and Friday, a lot's changed, specifically with the New York Mets. We'll get to the Yankees. We will get to football as we have now made it. Football is this week. There will not be another Sunday until February without it. But let's start with those Mets who are in a completely different position. That's right. And you know me, I'm not ashamed to say it. I called them dead back in, what was it, May?
They are dead.
Dead.
I'm willing to call it now.
Yeah.
This Met team is dead.
June 3rd. Fliegelman had it ready to go. We did not discuss that. And yeah, there it was, ready to go. What a shocker. And even the other day, after that brutal loss to Arizona, I did not call them dead, but I felt like if you were going to try and track down the Braves, who, frankly, I believe in, and I didn't expect to lose 3 out of 4 to Philadelphia, I got to admit. I know they're battered, I know they're injured, but they're the Braves, and this is when they play their best. And I believe in the Braves. Unfortunately. And that's why after that brutal loss, and I was working with Sean, and he was trying to do the whole Evan death of a season, and I wasn't going to go there, but I have to admit, the next game, even though they won that Thursday afternoon game, it just felt like, yeah, I know, bounce back, okay, yeah, you take 2 out of 3 from Arizona, okay, yeah, they're off a 6-game winning streak. Arizona's kind of gone anyway. Yeah, it's nice. You know, 3 weeks ago, I was talking about winning the tiebreaker between the Mets and the Diamondbacks. But ultimately, man, that loss last night, when you're trying to catch the Braves and you're 4 games back, you can't have slip-ups like that. You can't allow those kind of games where you battle back, took a lead, and blow it. Those games kill you. And the Mets continue to bounce back every time I feel this way. Every time you feel this way, I know I'm not alone. I'm just the dope with the microphone who happens to be a Yankee fan, so you get pissed when you hear it. But you felt the same way, too. That was a devastating loss. Devastating. And since that moment, this team is not lost. It's 5 consecutive games. I don't care about the White Sox. I don't care who they're playing. They're playing good baseball. They've won 5 in a row. They're a half a game back of the idle Atlanta Braves. And we'll get into their easy schedule moving forward. But this Met team, the two things that jump out at me, one is obviously the resilience, right? They just continue every time you think they've got this gut punch. And also, I mean, they've fallen back too, let's be fair. They were right there to be the first wild card team. With the last time they played the Braves, they were right there to be the first wild card team. And then they floundered. It has not been a straight path, even though they've been very good, and I know all the numbers. I'm not big on giving you all the records since this date and since that date. The Mets have played very well, one of the two best teams in baseball, you know, for this second half and even going back further than that. We all know that, but it hasn't been this steady rise. There's been ups. There's been incredible highs. There's been lows. There's been devastating losses. It has been a little bit of a roller coaster inside what has ultimately been a pretty damn good stretch, getting all the way now to 10 games over 500 from where they were 11 games under 500. But there has been this nature of allowing it to slip back, getting that brutal loss, and bouncing back. And right now, they're on one of these runs where they've just found a way to win. And that's the other thing that jumps out at me. Yes, the resilience. Yes, the manager. And yes, Lindor. right? I know how, you know, the Lindor conversation has been what I thought maybe the Pete Alonso conversation would have been. This, it's been the second half conversation, how good he is, the team leader he is, the MVP chance. I get it all. And he's uber impressive, and he's having an incredible season. And if it wasn't for Ohtani possibly being the first 50-50 guy we've ever seen, he'd be damn much in a better standing for the MVP. But he's been good now since May. He's been good for a long time. He's been good since that meeting. He's been good since, obviously, moving to the leadoff spot. And this offense has carried them for a lot of the stretch of this season, and especially that real stretch run right after the walk-off home run against Miami from J.D. Martinez. It has been the offense, and I've told you, this Met team isn't suited to do anything else but bludgeon you. And if the offense was going to go through its struggles and not hit with runners in scoring position and really, you know, get guys on but flounder and be an average offense, they weren't going to be good enough. I've been saying it and saying it and saying it, and I believed it. But what this stretch has really proved to me almost, or has really made me feel better about this Met team trying to catch this Atlanta Braves team, is it's the pitching. Now, the starting pitching has been better than we thought all year. From the jump, it's been a pleasant surprise. Right? We thought it was going to be the real problem with this team. We're clamoring, go sign Snell. Go sign Montgomery. Bring in someone else. The rotation without Senga is not good enough. Then Senga goes down. And we always thought it was going to be the main issue heading into the season. And it's never been. But it's also not been something good enough to carry them. It's been just steady enough. And it hasn't typically given you innings. And right now, they are on a stretch. And it's not just the rotation. It's the bullpen as well. Besides that blown game from Diaz, and I know he found his fastball and he's bounced back a little bit as well. But Maton, like, these guys have been, Buto has obviously had his moments over the last couple of weeks. But still, when he's been in the bullpen, they've done such a good job pitching. And part of the bullpen is the rotation and the innings they're given. And right now, it feels like, because this offense hasn't been killing it, it's had its moments, but for the most part, they're still not scoring a ton of runs here. They're still getting shut down on any given night. They're still not coming through with runners in scoring position. They've been able to win in a way I didn't think the Mets could win. I didn't think the Mets could go on a 5-game winning streak based on their pitching. I didn't think the Mets could make up 3 games against the Atlanta Braves in late August, early September, doing it strictly on their starting pitching. I didn't think that was plausible. I didn't think they had that kind of team. And here they are, Severino last night. You've seen, obviously, what Manaea and other guys have done. Peterson has been incredible for this team. But Severino, too, there's another one where, you know, 3 weeks ago, two, three weeks ago, we were all concerned about the innings limit, right? He had that stretch of 2 or 3 down games. He didn't pitch well, and it felt like he hit this wall. And we were talking about, Fliegelman were talking about it. Oh, man, that was why, you know, you had the opportunity to trade him at the deadline. He hasn't seen innings like this since 2018. I did show and show after it. Every Met talking point was about how important Severino is and where he is with his innings, and he hasn't been this since 2018, and we're concerned about where he's going. Well, he has answered every single question. He hit a brief wall, and he has bounced back in a big way. And this starting rotation is giving you innings. It's giving you quality. It's winning you games. Yes, against some bad teams, doesn't matter. Against good teams, too. And what started off as a team that worked its way back, bludgeoning you and scoring a ton of runs, and this offense, and you know, obviously Nimmo's cooled off big time, and Alvarez clearly to the point where Torrens has now played 2 games in a row. And pretty much, I mean, four is bad a little bit because of Alvarez just struggles, but mainly because of how good he is throwing runners out, and especially when you're going to play these young, fast teams, you know, like the Boston Red Sox, who stole 9 bases one night against the Yankees earlier in the season. Like, the offense has still been okay, but it's not been what's the driving force. And I didn't think they had another driving force except the offense. When they went on that run after the meeting, when they went on that long stretch of winning baseball, bludgeoning the good starting pitching, we talked about it, right? They beat up good starting pitcher after good starting pitch. Imanaga, they took care of in Chicago. You know, they took care of, in San Diego. They went through the God knows the Yankees starting pitching. whether it be Cole, who we'll get to in a little bit, 888-808-1019. Cole, Luis Gil, like they just went through everybody like a hot knife through butter. And that offense with obviously Vientos having his major season and, you know, stepping up and becoming the third baseman for this team, or obviously Lindor, what he's done, Jeff McNeil coming back after the All-Star break and getting little positives like Iglesias, who's still coming through with big-time clutch hits. And, you know, Bader, who's cooled off but had his best offensive season of his career. Just Taylor, everybody come, like everyone having the best year of their career, and this offense was carrying them. And that's what you thought was the only way they could do it. And as we head down the stretch, and as they're about to make this playoff push, as they are now a half a game back, holding off the Cubs, trying to catch the Atlanta Braves, this Met team is showing a versatility I didn't think they had. I knew they could score. You know what? I'll even give you this. I felt like they've had guts. Right, this isn't the first time they've shown you guts. It isn't the first time they've bounced back off a terrible loss. I felt like this team had the compete level in them. Right, they're down. They lose the first five games. They have that miraculous win. Then they go on a little bit of a tear there. Then they have the disastrous West Coast trip. They're terrible. They have the meeting. They come back from that. They've had brutal losses along the way. I've seen the resiliency. It's important. It's something that's going to help carry this team and makes you feel good about this team. But what this stretch in particular has shown me, at least right now, and I expect it to continue, is that they can pitch. They don't have to score a ton of runs. And if you are going to find a way, because I still believe in the Atlanta Braves and their schedule moving forward here until they go on the until they welcome in the Dodgers. They got the Rockies, they got the last place Blue Jays, they got a quick one game against the Reds, then they got two in Washington. That is a little bit of an easy stretch here as opposed to four games against Philadelphia. If you're going to catch this Atlanta Braves team, if you're going to do what the 2022 New York Mets could not do, you're going to have to do it in a multitude of ways. And yes, Diaz is going to have to be steady at the closer position. And yes, this offense is going to have to score runs, but you know what? You needed something to carry when the offense doesn't score runs. And this starting pitching, including Severino, who we were all scared about 2 weeks ago, has completely answered every question. Manaea has been unbelievable. Peterson has been great, and now Severino's on a roll. To go along with the ability of this bullpen, who has completely turned it around, and you feel so much better about a handful of guys in this bullpen. Right now, the Mets are showing an ability to win games in every which way. And if that's what they're going to have to do, if they're going to want to beat the Atlanta Braves, and that's what they're going to have to do if they're going to want this season to culminate in really, I'm sorry, I also don't want to hear this. Let's just be fair. This Mets team has to make the playoffs. All right, I don't want to hear this meaningful baseball. I get it. And maybe in 2 months, 3 months, you'll be able to tell yourself that. It's the start of the season when you steal Juan Soto from the Yankees and you're getting ready and they spend $1 billion in the offseason. Maybe you can look back at this year and go, hey, they were playing meaningful games late in September. Hogwash. This team was in the playoffs. This team was right there to become the first wild card. This team is good enough to be a playoff team in this National League. And if they're going to do it, it's going to take every aspect of a team to do it. And right now, that's what they're showing you. They're showing you more. They're more than a potent offense. They're more than a resilient group. They've got multiple ways to beat you. And that's what they're going to have to do if they're going to get to the promised land, which, by the way, make no mistake, they have to get there. To me, the season's a disappointment. Things change. At the beginning of the year, could you sell me on important September games? Sure. When they were 11 games under 500, could you sell me on important, meaningful September games? Yeah, you could. When they win the first two games of a four-game set against the Braves and are a half game out of taking over the first wild card, securely in the playoff spot, things change. And this Met team has to find a way to get into this postseason, has to give itself a chance with this offense, this starting pitching, this resiliency, this special kind of season, whether it's grimace, whether it's, oh my God, whether it's Hawk to a girl, whatever other stupid stuff we want to talk about, instead of just focusing on the idea that the Mets are playing good baseball, whatever kind of magic, all the bit players and role players who are having career years, guys like Iglesias who step up and become key members of this team, all this magical stuff that's happening, it's not good enough just to have a nice little season. Now, once you get to the postseason, yeah, that's gravy. No one's expecting you to win the World Series. But you know what? I've said it enough as a Yankee fan. It's a crapshoot. And as you watch them play and take 2 out of 3 from Arizona, who's been as hot as anyone in baseball, and you watch them split a series with San Diego, and you watch them chase down the Atlanta Braves, why not the Mets? Why not the Mets? 888-808-1019. We'll take your Mets phone calls to start. We'll get to the Yankees. We'll get to last night's victory, the poor play against the under 500 teams in August. And, of course, we will get to the roster construction and why a certain someone is still in AAA. 888-808-1019. And, of course, we'll get to the football as we get through the show as well. Football season's about to start. I'm going to save the picks and everything, but we'll get into some things. There's a video, too, for Jet fans that I want you to hear. I want you to hear a certain someone talk about your team, and maybe it'll help you get excited. Maybe there's this certain someone who's been on the opposite side who has nothing but praise to heap on this offense of the New York Jets. See how you feel about here.
Start some trouble and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 225. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 888-808-1019. Good to be back. I was on vacation for a while. We did a long drive. I hit up, we went to Camden Yards. Saw them play the Red Sox. Red Sox won that night. Then we drove down to South Carolina, visited my uncle who just recently retired there. Then we went to Disney. I'm still kicking myself. I'm wearing broken glasses because I lost my glasses at Disney. I'm very frustrated with myself. Lost glasses at the pool like a dope. I'm still getting emails from Disney saying the search is still on. Yeah, you could call off the search. My glasses haven't been returned yet. When are they going to get returned? Oh, 2 weeks later? Because you call lost and found, they make you file like a form and send it in, and then they email me. I get emails every 2 days. The search is still on. Like, the search is still on. I was surprised. That's not like I left money or anything valuable. The frames are expensive, but they're prescription glasses. I thought I was going to get them back. Never did. But the Mets are back in things. And as we get ready for this playoff, this is, you know, for me, a baseball junkie, this is my favorite time of the year. This, and for us in sports radio, it's the same thing as the first day of school. This is the, you know, sports radio new year. We all come back from vacation. We get ready to go. No one takes a day off until Thanksgiving. We got both teams here in a pennant race. Both teams here fighting. Yankees still a game in front. I know it's a half a game in the standings. They're a game in the loss column over Baltimore after being, you know, terrible in the month of August average, but terrible considering who they were playing. And thankfully, Baltimore's been just as bad. And that should be a fun division race the entire year. And the Mets battling for that third wild card position. We got football starting. This is the best time of year. Now is the time to bring out the Oktoberfest. Apparently, it's going to be 50 or 48 degrees tomorrow morning when I'm waiting outside for the bus with the kids. Today is the first day of school now. My kids are back at school. It's that time of year, and it's time for the Mets to make this push. And I've been impressed with them. I've been impressed with the way they pitched. I've been really impressed with the way they pitched. And Severino, who was a huge question mark. Like, there are things that come along in a baseball season that will determine how the rest of your year goes. And, you know, the Yankees are kind of dealing with some pitching injuries right now. Seems like Luis Gil and Clark hopefully going to come back, and we'll see if they do a six-man rotation. But they need one of those guys to be a really good starting pitcher and one of them to transition to the bullpen. The Mets had a question mark that was going to determine how the rest of their year went. And that was Severino. 2-3 weeks ago, when Severino had a couple of bad starts in a row, and everybody was questioning, well, look, you know, he hasn't had innings anywhere near this since 2018. It's a long time. You know, should they transition him to the bullpen? Right? This is why maybe we should have traded him at the deadline. You've gotten the best out of him. The rest of the year is going to be a disaster, at least the unknown. That was a crossroads on where the Mets season was going to go. If he completely floundered, if he fell victim to that innings limit, if he got a dead arm, if his fastball eluded him, if he could no longer be trusted inside this rotation, this Mets team was going to struggle. Right now, they might not have fallen out of things because Minaya stepped up, and I still, you know, the team's resilient, and they've had other, and Peterson's been great. So it might not have completely just wiped them out. But without a healthy, strong, pitching well Severino, I don't think this team has a legitimate chance to chase down the Braves. And if they were to ever do so, I don't think would think they'd have a legitimate chance in a playoff series. They need Severino to be Severino. And starts like last night are what, you know, make you feel like he's answered that question. He has bounced back. The fastball is there. The swing and miss stuff is there. He's able to go deep into games. He looks stronger as the game goes on. Severino has been everything you could have wanted him to be. And really, the handful of signings they made for the rotation have been, you know, unbelievable. Minaya and Severino are just home run signings to the point where, you know, now you're talking about what kind of contract you got to give them in the offseason. Where they seemed like clear, obvious trade candidates at the deadline, 1 year only. You're going to build the rotation moving forward next year. A lot of free agent pitchers, Corbin Burns and the like, out in the offseason where they're going to spend a ton of money now that they've gotten under the luxury tax and they're going to, you know, lose the Verlander and Scherzer money, and it's going to the spending spree that's about to happen. You didn't expect that spending spree to include two pitchers you took flyers on. And while they weren't the driving force necessarily of getting back into the thick of things, right now in this five-game winning streak where they're playing good baseball, it absolutely has been the starting pitching. And what Peterson's been able to do too, I mean, just this group has been really, really impressive. And if you're a Met fan right now, one, you're going to be rooting for the Yankees against the Cubs coming up. That's always fun. Mets fans for Yankees. But you've put yourself back into a position where you are right there with the Braves. I have to admit. When they found themselves four games out after that blown save against Diaz, I did not see them making up 3.5 games in a week. I just didn't see it. I did not think I'd be opening the show here my first night back in the overnights talking about how the Mets have got within 0.5 game of the Braves. And yet here we are. Here we are. Now there are flaws, there are holes. I'm still concerned about this team. But I mean, what you're seeing from this group, the resiliency and the leadership, and we can get to how good Lindor has been. I mean, that's been a steady heartbeat of the fan here for 2 months, right? The kind of how good is he? Is he in the MVP conversation? Is he a superstar? Is he underappreciated by the fan base? I mean, we've had a million different ways to have a Lindor conversation over the last 2 months, but there is no doubt. I mean, this guy has been everything you could have possibly wanted. I mean, he comes through with every big hit. he changed the season, calling the meeting and moving him to lead off clearly is the defining move of this year. I don't think there's another move, another thing that changed, that sparked this team, changed this team, that you can point to. There are moments, I always go back to the walk-off home run against Miami from J.D. Martinez, but the decision to move Nimmo off leadoff and put Lindor there changed this team. Changed Lindor, changed the team. And what he's doing right now, whether it's home runs, whether it's base hits, two out RBIs, I mean, he's been everything you could have possibly been, everything you could have possibly hoped for. And I'm surprised so many, and I'm learning it. I remember I did the show with Tommy, and he feels like it's a million different things, all ancillary stuff. It's the hair, it's the smile, it's the this, it's the that, it's the fighting with McNeil, it's whatever, obviously the thumbs down in the first year of his Met career. Whatever the case may be, I'm surprised so many Met fans needed this kind of run. Even if it falls short, now I'm hopefully, even if the Mets end up falling short, I'm hoping this is enough for Met fans to understand what you have here. Is he overpaid? Everyone in baseball is overpaid. Let's be honest. So, like, is he worth his contract? I don't know, but he's pretty freaking damn good, no? And as far as Met acquisitions go, or really just Met everyday players, I mean, this guy has been as good. You look back even in disappointing seasons, and I know I'll be the first one to tell you, last year during the June swoon and some of their struggles in the middle of the year when it fell apart, Lindor was nowhere to be found. Yes. That's part of it. But you look at his power numbers last year at the shortstop position, they're as good as anybody in the game. You look at his numbers for the Mets, sure, yeah, okay, his batting average has been down from where it was in Cleveland. His OPS has been down at times from where it was in Cleveland. But, I mean, he's been a steady Met, and right now he is leading the charge to one of the more surprising, fun seasons Met fans have had in a while. Because, you know, relate it to the Yankees and my fandom and try and put myself in a Met fan's shoes, it feels like 2017 where the expectations were low. Like, heading into the season, there were no expectations. The team did everything. The owner did everything. The GM did almost everything. I know they told you we expect to compete, but you know. They tried to temper enthusiasm. And then when you're 11 games under 500, and you got, Jorge Lopez throwing his glove into the stands and telling you, you know, whether he did or not, that they're the worst team in baseball. Like, from that moment on, this has been a wild ride filled with a million different adventures and a million different side stories and a million different things to celebrate, get annoyed with. Like, it's kind of been this roller coaster of a year that I'm sorry, has to end in the promised land. This is now a disappointing season if they do not make the playoffs. Expectations change as the season goes along. And when you were securely in a wild card spot, ready to take over the first wild card, playing as good as any team in baseball and have put on a stretch of being as good as any team in baseball, if you're going to hearken and you're going to talk about and you're going to brag and beat your chest about the record they've had since June 1st, and it's 51 and what, and it's the best record, this, you know, it's the, them and the Diamondbacks, the two best teams in baseball over the last 3 months. If you want to brag about being the best team in baseball over the last 3 months, how do you satisfy yourself with just missing the playoffs? Because you got off to a miserable start? If the Mets want to be, and if their fans want to tell you they are, and I think they are, I mean, the record is what it is. If you're going to be one of the two best teams in baseball for 3 months, you got to get there. You got to get there. And right now, they are right there. They're playing as well as anyone. They're hot as anyone. They've come back from every time you thought they were dead. And I'm not alone. I remember there's a certain guy in this studio who put out a tweet, something along the lines of, that was Pete Alonso. This is definitely the last important game the Mets will play, and it could be the last important bat Pete Alonso has as a Met. It wasn't just me. It wasn't just dopey Yankee fans who just troll the Mets. It's not me and Keith. It's you. You thought they were dead, too. And they keep reviving themselves, but ultimately they have to get to the finish line. And over the last five games here, what I've seen from this group and their ability to pitch and their ability to get outs in the bullpen and to get innings from their starters and to have the question mark of Severino and his inning limits be answered in such a way and have Manaea become one of the better swing and miss guys in the sport over his last four or five starts. Now I've learned another thing from this group. They can beat you a multitude of ways. I thought they were a one-trick pony. Show up, score 7-8 runs, or you're going to lose. That was the Mets. That's how I viewed them. That is not how I view them anymore. They can get into a playoff series, and they can outpitch you with the one-year signings that they did in the off-year while losing Kodai Senga. That's an impressive feat that I didn't think this Met team was capable of, and here we are. 888-808-1019. We'll get to the Yankees in a little bit. Obviously, never like to see a pitcher as one in, as important as Gerrit Cole walk off a mound, but it seems like, hopefully, they've avoided major injury. They did get a win in the first game at Texas, but we've got questions. Got questions about this roster. And it's also time to give, you want to give certain people flowers, there's a certain Yankee who we love taking shots at. Love. It's time to heap a little bit of praise his way.
Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
McMonagle with you on The Fan. I'm back. Everything's back. School is back. I'm looking forward to this. Let me just tell you right now. I've been waiting for this moment for a year and a half, maybe. Well, since I got the job, I guess, when my shift changed. Because now my little guy, Andrew, who I had to have we had a fantasy football draft. My brother-in-law thought it'd be fun to have like a family with the kids kind of fantasy, a six-team fantasy football draft, where my son was like screaming to take DJ Metcalf with the first pick, and I'm like, no, I'm not doing it. There are things you want to take a quarterback too early because you know the names, okay? But we're not going. Where'd you see DK Metcalf? Nothing wrong with DK Metcalf. He's not a first-round pick, not in a six-team league. But finally, my little guy is now in kindergarten. So that means they're on the same bus. And what that means is daddy doesn't have to wait for Tommy to get on the bus and then drive Andrew to pre-K, which is about 20 minutes away. Now we walk right down the block. The bus comes, takes both of them away. And daddy goes right back inside to go to sleep. Now, I could lie to you and tell you this opens up time for me to actually exercise. And maybe I'll lie to myself and tell me that's true. It does open up some time to exercise and still get to bed at a normal time. Now, instead of driving 20 minutes away and 20 minutes back, theoretically, I could exercise for 40 minutes. And that sounds great. And maybe I'll do that once, twice a month. But I'm going to end up just getting to sleep a hell of a lot earlier. And I've been waiting for this day to just plop them on the bus. And let's be honest, my mother's kind of there. Now it's easy, just, you know, walk them outside. The bus literally picks them up 20 feet from my house. This is great. Life is about to change.
I thought you were going to say once a week for it. Like, you're honest with yourself. You've not slept in the last year and a half. Catching up before you do anything else.
I know. I can't wait for today. I'm going to go to sleep as soon as they get on the bus. I'm going right back.
Extra hours a day are we talking for you?
Well, it's like a 20-minute drive. Dropping them off takes like, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes. Then it's 20 minutes back. So it's like, you know, 45 minutes. It's an extra 45 minutes. That's not, it's not crazy. It's just, it gives me, it does give me an opportunity to do that and get to bed at the same normal time, but it also just, it's less being awake and doing something. Like, I don't know. Now, it's easy to, because now we don't even have to drive at all. I don't have to get in the car at all. The bus stop is literally down the block from my house. So now.
Right, on top of the 45 minutes, you're conserving all the energy.
Yeah, just the energy of driving still. Plus, I'm exhausted. Like, it's I'm glad I'm not behind the wheel at all. Like,
answering
just,
the questions of young kids. I'm sure in that 20-minute car ride.
Yeah, oh, God, yes. So just all of it. It's just, it's going to save me about 45 minutes. And when I'm sleeping 4 or 5 hours a day, the 45 minutes makes a big difference. My life is about to vastly improve. So I'm looking forward to that. But I will try and, you know, maybe just go for a walk. Because now if I don't have to get into the car, I'll just walk and just keep walking maybe or something for 40 minutes. That'd be nice. Because Disney, I walked a ton in Disney. Don't get me wrong. I think we did the two, we did 3 park days. And I think we averaged somewhere between 9 and 10,000 steps a day. Or was it 9 and 10 miles a day? I think that's it. I think we walked about 9 or 10 miles a day. But, you know, I was dieting, or at least somewhat, you know, I was pretty strict with the diet, at least. I could always exercise more. But I was pretty strict with the diet for a while, and I lost some weight. But when you're strict with the diet like that, and not eating pretty much, I'm, you know, trying to do one meal a day and whatever else, I don't have to get into my diet. But I dropped some pounds pretty much just not eating. When you go to Disney, and the not eating is out the window, and I'm having bread pudding for every day for breakfast, which, by the way, I tweeted this out. There's a couple of truths I found on this vacation, food truths, that I just absolutely 100% accurate. The best way to have a potato with breakfast is not hash, is not, you know, hash browns. Right? I'm sorry. The best way to have potatoes with breakfast is tater tots. They are the most efficient, delicious, crispy. And they're not the same as hash browns. They're smaller. They get crispier. Tater tots are the best potato to have with breakfast, bar none. I'm convinced of it. And two, bread pudding is better than all other puddings. A really well-done, delicious, creamy bread pudding. I'll take that over chocolate pudding. I'm a huge rice pudding guy. Take it over rice pudding, bread pudding, if it's done well. For breakfast with some fruit, that's as good as it gets. I'm a huge bread pudding guy. So even though I walked a ton in Disney, it didn't do me any favors. Because you just eat nonstop. And I stopped drinking beer for a long time, and I was drinking beer at Disney. Because you need it. If you're in Animal Kingdom, right? And I don't care what time it is. Don't judge me. All right, 11:15 in the morning. I've been there for 4 hours already. It's 98 degrees. I'm dying. If you're not getting a cold one, you're doing it wrong. I'm just telling you that right now. If you are not pushing that stroller one-handed with a cold one in the other hand, you're just not doing Disney right. That's just a fact. But we had fun. The kids had fun. They're too old for the stroller anyway. The stroller was mainly I was pushing around the cooler with all the snacks in it. The kids get in a little bit if they need just a break from the sun or, you know, looking a nap or something maybe. But you bring it just in case. So I'm pushing around an empty stroller, having a cold one in 98 degree heat. Amazing. 888-808-1019. So we talked about the Yankees a little bit. Let's get into them right here before we get to the top of the hour. Your calls at 888-808-1019 on this Tuesday morning to get our year started. The New York Yankees won a game last night. How about that? They'll probably lose today. That's typically what they do. Win one, lose two. Win one, lose two. As they are now, what, 10-9 in August? When they were supposed to be beating up on these miserable teams, when they were supposed to be beating up on the Tigers, they were supposed to be beating up on the Nationals, they're supposed to be beating up on the Cardinals and all these lousy teams, and instead, they do what they've done all year, Which that is my favorite thing of this season is how the narrative has changed on the Yankees so dramatically. And both are clear indications that they are not World Series contenders by the fan base. At the beginning of the year, when they were winning all those games and building this record that has allowed them to stay in first place while being 500 for half the season, that was all predicated on beating bad teams. That's all they did. They beat bad teams. They couldn't beat good teams. They lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore. Can't beat good teams. Split a series, a 4-game set with Seattle. Can't beat good teams. Took 6 out of 7 against the Astros, but that was before they were a good team. All you could do is beat bad teams. You can't beat good teams, and that proves you can't win a World Series. And now, all they do is beat good teams. Every single team that's in the playoffs, they have the best record in baseball against winning teams. And they've pretty much owned everybody who's currently holding a playoff position. But now they play down to their competition and they lose to bad teams. And you know what that proves? That proves you're not a World Series contender. So pretty much, if the Yankees lose, they're not a World Series contender, which I get. The other narrative that bothers me, since we're on things that bother me, is this whole, well, this is the year, right? Yes, the Juan Soto, no doubt. That's part of it too. But the rest of the league is mediocre. It's wide open. If you weren't, why not go all in this year? Like, if this was, I don't understand this year in particular. Oh, I don't understand. Why not now? Like, please. Are you telling me if the Astros had 100 wins right now, or the American League was tough and the Yankees were battling for the wild card, you'd be like, hey, it's okay to be mediocre. Everyone else is good. You'd be screaming the same thing. Oh, this is the year where there's clearly better than you. You got to do everything you can to get better. Like, the idea that you need extra layers of narrative on why the Yankees should be better than they are is dumb. They should be better than they are because you want them to win. Stop making up nonsense. Oh, the league is mediocre, so they really should be all in. Oh, they have Juan Soto, so they really should be all in. No, they should really be in all year because they're the Yankees. They make the most money, blah, 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 blah. And that's all true. So stop coming up with more reasons for you to be mad about why they're not all in. They should be all in every single stinking year, not because they have Juan Soto, not because the league is mediocre, because they're the Yankees. And that leads me to the question on whether or not they are all in. And that brings me to the question of Jason Dominguez. And let's just get to this quick, because I'm as frustrated as any of you. I know what you think. I'm not going to do what everybody thinks I'm going to do. I got Fliegelman over there saying, I can't wait till you defend this Dominguez stuff. I'm not. Here's what I'll say. Here's my quick little brief line of defense before I get mad about it. I do not think Jason Dominguez should be with the New York Yankees in the role of Grisham. I do not think he should be Trent Grisham. So anybody who's out there clamoring, we'll just cut Trent Grisham and put him in there and he'll learn from Juan Soto and Aaron Judge and he gets playing time as he gets playing time. No. Jason Dominguez, and it's also been made clear now, if you read The Athletic, this is not about manipulating time at all. They get no benefit. He's already had enough days on a major league roster where he's not eligible, even though he could win the Rookie of the Year next year. Winning Rookie of the Year next year will not get the Yankees picks. He's been with the team too long. So there's literally zero reason. There is zero money manipulation, time manipulation. There is no reason that the Yankees should hold him off this roster. There is no benefit to it next year. So let's forget that. The Yankees are not unserious. The Yankees are doing what they think is the best thing for them. They're just wrong. They're not unserious. They're not purposely putting out a worse team. They're just wrong. But let me say this. Jason Dominguez should not be up here unless they're willing to give him regular at-bats. I believe that. So when they tell you we don't want to bring him up here because he's got to play every day, I agree. He should be playing every day. I don't want him to come up here and be the fourth outfielder. I don't want him to come up here and play as much as Trent Grisham does just because he's better than Trent Grisham. I don't. I want him up here being the everyday left fielder. And I don't understand why he's not. Now, I also don't think it's some sort of guarantee we're going to see some great version of him. He's been dealing with an oblique injury. Or he dealt with an oblique injury. And when he came back from it, he struggled. And it's only been the last two and a half weeks that he's got it going offensively. So I understood not bringing him up until he got hot. But now the September 1st call-up, it allows you to bring the roster up. It's not even about that necessarily. Because I don't want him to be the extra man. I don't want him to be the pinch runner that they're bringing up. I want him to be the everyday left fielder. And we've talked about it, the DJ LeMahieu thing. They played him and gave him as long a run as possible. Now Rizzo's back. He ain't playing. You might see DJ LeMahieu make the odd start against the left-handed pitcher, but he's not a part of this team. He's not a major part of this team. He will not play in the playoffs, not against left-handed pitching, not against anybody. Rizzo, he's gone. You've seen Rizzo's play in the defense, how important he is to this team, how good friends he is with Judge. Like, he's not going to play. Rizzo's going to play. Rizzo's a World Series champion. Rizzo is going to play. Jazz Chisholm is going to play, and Gleyber Torres is going to play. There is nowhere for DJ LeMahieu to play. So I didn't get all crazy as everybody else did about DJ LeMahieu because I knew there was an end in sight. Rizzo was the end in sight for DJ LeMahieu. I tried to tell you all this. I'm telling you, he is not going to play. But Verdugo is another story. And I'm trying to wrap my mind around why they continue to throw him out there in left field. And I know that he had a good series in Washington. Right? I know. He had 8 hits in 5 games because he had a three hit game. I get it. And ultimately, they believe in veterans, and they brought him here. He's liked in the clubhouse, particularly by the captain. And I'm wondering what kind of role that has to play in it, to be totally honest with you. Nobody wants to hear this because we want to blame Boone and Cashman, which I'm blaming them. But I do think there's a role here by Aaron Judge keeping Verdugo around. And the feeling of he's important in the room, and the feeling that they like him, and the feeling that he's a gamer, and the feeling that in the big games he'll show up. I honestly think that's part of it. But he's been bad enough. Jason Dominguez came up and showed you promise. I don't know he'll be what we saw at the end of last year. In fact, he won't be, let's be honest. He won't be that good. That was a crazy run. But that's what his ability is plausible can be. We've seen what Verdugo is. We've seen it all year. He's talking about he could win a Gold Glove in left field. Yeah, for a time he was really brilliant in left field. And he makes he made the other catch up against the wall last week. Fine. Balls are dropping out there too. Like, the guy hasn't been that good defensively either. And offensively, he's a waste. You're hitting him ninth against right-handed pitching. And here's my answer to this as well, because I said DJ LeMahieu's not going to play. I still firmly believe, unless something dramatically changes with Verdugo, that it will be Jason Dominguez on this team and that he will be making playoff starts and he will be the left fielder by the end of this season and he will be the left fielder in the postseason. But they're going to give Verdugo every second of every day. And I don't know why. I don't know why. So your guess is as good as mine because it's not about manipulation. It's not about getting him. It's not about getting another draft pick if he wins Rookie of the Year next year. They can't. It's already gone. The only reason is because they believe Verdugo gives them a better chance to win games. That if Verdugo gets hot, he is a more proven commodity than Jason Dominguez, who showed you a glimpse 2 weeks at the end of last year. They value the idea that he has been an average to slightly above average player in this league for 5 years, as opposed to 2 weeks from Jason Dominguez. That's it. They are not unserious. They are not losing on purpose. They are not playing worse players on purpose. They believe that Alex Verdugo getting hot and Alex Verdugo turning into himself is the best thing for this team. They have a one-game lead in the playoff in the division. They're going to the playoffs anyway. You have made it blatantly clear that you don't care about division titles, that you don't care about hanging division title banners. They are trying to get the best roster come postseason time, and they believe that is a Verdugo playing well. That's what they believe. And they might be right. They might be right. That might be the best option. What are the odds they're going to get it? We've seen 5 months of Verdugo. Let's get Dominguez as many at-bats as possible because you know what? You're going to play him anyway. Me and Fliegerman were talking about it. He said it. I agree. If you bring up Dominguez now and he bombs for 2 weeks, then you go back to Verdugo. I don't understand it. I don't understand not at least putting a fire under Verdugo and bringing in Jason Dominguez and saying, look, your job's at stake here. Something. We'll get into other reasons why the Yankees have lost besides playing DJ LeMahieu and Verdugo and not calling up Dominguez because there's two guys in the middle of the lineup who, when they don't hit, the Yankees don't win. And we've said that as some sort of like negative about the rest of the roster. That's part of it. But the fact of the matter is, you could say that about every team. Corey Seager went off. That's why the Texas Rangers won the World Series. If your best players don't play like your best players, you're not going to win. So we can pout and we can scream about Judge hasn't gotten a chance and you're going to really allow Judge in his prime not to win a championship. Part of that is Judge coming through in the big moments. Now, I'm not making a big stink out of one series. He was bad against the Cardinals. Same thing with Soto. No hits against Washington. Not making a big deal of it, but let's just be honest. They could play Dominguez. They could play whoever you want. We're screaming about DJ LeMahieu. They lost to the Nationals. We're screaming about DJ LeMahieu. Screaming about DJ LeMahieu. DJ LeMahieu got 3 hits in the Washington Nationals series. Juan Soto got 0. Which one was more impactful? Which one was the reason they lost? The one at bat in the 9th inning from DJ LeMahieu or Juan Soto doing nothing all series long? Which one meant more? And that's not to get on them. It's just the stating of a fact. Your best players have to play like your best players. That goes for everybody.